From the belly up in Aspen, Colorado, this is Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC. Our show today is part of the Aspen Ideas Festival, which is a gathering of hundreds of interesting and influential people who try to solve the world's problems before lunch. Today we are asking our guests what we can do post-crash to get our country and our lives back on track. Saul Griffith, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you.
Saul is a scientist, an inventor, founder of a whole bunch of companies, and like They Might Be Giants, you also have a sort of kids media project. How did that get started?
So I had a privileged childhood where my mother was an artist, so half of our house was a studio, and my father was an engineer and I guess an inventor, so the other half of this house was a workshop, and we slept in the backyard.
That sounds fun.
It was fabulous, absolutely fabulous, and the concept in our house was always, you know, you always made everything yourself, and I think it was a great childhood, and I wanted to give some of that back to the world. And so I teamed up with a guy who actually illustrates Spider-Man as his day job, and we write science comic books for kids that just teach them the passion and the joy of, you know, seeing the world for what it could be.
You also have a non-kids project, as I understand it, that uses kites to generate power, which sounds like something a 12-year-old would have come up with.
Right. So I've been spending the last number of years concentrating specifically on energy and renewable energy and how do we solve sort of this energy problem, and there's this huge untapped source of energy called wind at high altitude. So you can only build towers so high, and then it gets too expensive. So how do you extract power from the wind at much higher altitudes? And so you have to build something that looks like a kite. So curiously, every child's favorite plaything may in fact save the world.
And does this seem to be working or could
it
work?
It works great at small scale, and now we have to make it bigger and bigger and bigger. I haven't been able to convince anyone to give me their private jet to run experiments yet.
Well, there are probably a few private jets in the audience.
I know the audience specifically requesting. I could rip the fuselage off your private jet and make a 5-megawatt wind turbine and power all of Aspen. So
if you're serious about green energy out there... Now, I also am told that you perform at birthday parties.
I get my sanity and also, as They Might Be Giants get their ideas from the audience, I actually steal all my ideas, as you've noticed, from 10 to 12-year-old kids. Because, when you become an old inventor, you sort of run out of ideas. And so you go to these birthday parties we do school workshops, and I love to just ask these 10-year-olds, if you could invent anything... what would you invent? And so if it's a 10-year-old boy, 95% of the time they say flying skateboard. And then you just sort of go through, oh, well, we could do that. You just need to design a skateboard with wings this big or magnetic levitation. If it's a 10-year-old girl, she'll say, I'd like to design a machine that can read the dreams of my friend and play them back to me. And then you're like, that's really hard.
That's why girls are better than boys.
It's absolutely true. These girls are astounding. And I say, the boys' thing is already a solved problem. We could have flying skateboards today if we wanted them. But your problem is a 30-year problem. You should go into neuroscience. And then I describe to them the experiments that they run at Harvard, where they take black and white movies, typically westerns with Clint Eastwood on a horseback, and they cut the back off the head of a cat, and they stick electrodes in the back of the visual cortex, and they play the western movies at them. And with very sensitive equipment, you can actually receive the image of Clint Eastwood. It's a bit fuzzy at the back of the brain of the cat.
Now you say, kids, don't try this at home, I assume, right?
So actually, at 10 years old, kids love this stuff, and they're all over it. And then you say, this is the early experiments in how you get to building the machine that can read the dreams of your friend and yada, yada.
I thought in the real world, in the 21st century, scientists were supposed to be hyper-specialized. You sound like, some children's book or somebody from the 19th century or some Nikola Tesla guy who tries to do everything. Why? You're odd.
You've been speaking to my mother. Yeah. So I guess there's a bit of a misconception. I think the best scientists I know are very multidisciplinary. and the best science that is done is the breakthrough science at sort of the boundary of a two or three different disciplines. And quite frankly, this may be part of the problem, the 10-year-old problem. They think to grow up and be a scientist, you're going to be unbelievably boring, you'll know everything about solar plasma, and you'll be able to correct these guys when they sing their song. Whereas really, science is just a great lifelong adventure where you trip from one idea into the next, and then you have a conversation with someone here, and it's like, holy cow, I want to now work on that.
You've written that you think if the people of planet Earth could agree on a target, or even the people of the United States, a target for CO2 and how we want to bring the levels down, that once that was decided definitively, the engineers and scientists of the world could get us there. You have a strong conviction that that's the case.
Absolutely. If we had the conviction to say 450 parts per million was the maximum CO2 concentration we want in the atmosphere, engineers with that goal, engineers just like doing stuff. They just, you know, the engineers are, you know, twiddling their thumbs waiting for the politicians to say, just do it. You just say 450, the engineers I know can do that and they can do it today. If you say 400, they'll know how to do that. 350, which is what some people argue for, we don't actually know how to do that because we're past it. But very realistically, engineers could go out and do all of this. And in terms of, you know, a time for that American inventor to reemerge, this really is the time. We basically have to reinvent all of the bad habits. So make everything, you know, you hear about this in terms of efficiency. So we need to make cars that are 10 times better. We need to figure out ways of giving me a glass of water that don't come in a plastic cup that will last for 10 million years, right? There's everything around you is broken, which for me is like the world's so exciting right now. Everything can be reinvented. And for 10-year-olds, there's been a unique failure of vision to communicate to these kids that, no, the world could be brilliant. I mean, remember the space program. We were all going to be walking on the moon, and you'd be there with your dog, and your dog would be walking around in zero gravity with a fishbowl on its head. And
we could do that, though.
We could do that, right? The world was going to be fabulous. We need to paint that vision of possibility that this new green world for kids is absolutely fabulous. And so I thought a little bit more about this, thinking we might need some examples. So there's this curious thing. The two most energy-efficient forms of transport we know, in terms of people per unit of energy, are roller coasters and zip lines. So you tell a 10-year-old kid, in your future, the green future, you're going to go to school on a zip line, or actually halfway to school on a zip line, and then the last bit on a roller coaster. They are all over it. So we need to give this positive vision. The future is going to be great.
Saul Griffith. You are, in every sense, fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.